So thank you for getting up so early to make this 8 o'clock presentation. It's on how to market IT. And each of our panel speakers will talk for 5 minutes, giving you an overview of one of their marketing channels. The presentation itself is called Using 21st Century Tools to Market 21st Century Resources. So if you're in the wrong presentation, if you haven't figured it out by now, this is your opportunity to leave, and no penalties, no foul. So our goal is to talk for 30 minutes. Take questions for 15 minutes. So as we're walking through our presentations pretty quickly, if you just hold all your questions to the end, that would help us make sure we get you out in time. So the two tools we're using is called Poll Everywhere. That was a cell phone polling tool, and Prezi. And notes on these tools, plus all of our actual presentation and notes that we're giving you, that will all be in the website for EDUCAUSE at the end of the session, later today, tomorrow, early next week. So let's get started. I'm first up. I'm Carlin Chatfield. I'm from Rice University in Houston, Texas. And let's move finger on the right button. Just as this Prezi is going to help you focus on different communication channels, you need to focus on a specific audience, target audience, before you select your communication channel. So at Rice, one of the important groups that we needed to contact was the university administrators who control our budget. We wanted to also change their perception of IT. The target group was the president, the provost, and vice presidents and vice provosts for finance, administration, that sort of thing. So these are people who think big picture. At any company, university, people at this level, they're big picture thinkers. They don't have to think about the everyday details. They have minions to do that. So to reach somebody who's a big picture thinker, you need to take them a big picture. We wanted to use billboard style headlines, photos, and just enough content to show that there was truly a story to tell. That's why an annual report works really, really well. I know all your team leaders want 500 plus words to explain why what they do in IT is so important to the university mission, but truthfully, even though I'm saying you need an annual report, you'll be lucky if your audience reads 25% of the content. They're going to look at the pictures and look at the headlines. A few of them will zoom in on the statistics, so you have to have valid statistics in there. You can't say nobody's going to read line 5 on page 10, so it doesn't matter if it has the typo in it or not. It all has to be good content, but it needs to be short and to the point. One of the things that you want to do is just use very few graphs. Use like one graph for your help desk statistics. How many customers did they help? What schools were they in? Did most of your time go to engineering and the natural sciences, or were you doing a lot of work in humanities on their audiovisual equipment? You need probably one graph talking about what kinds of service did your customers need. Was everybody asking for printing help? Or was there a big problem during the year maybe with cell phones? Did most of your staff spend time on PDAs? One of the things that's helpful in that is that you're able to track on an annual basis, look how much more of our time is being spent on PDAs. Do we need to change either our organization or our training to support all the requests we're getting for a particular service? You want to also make sure that you've got some customer success stories in there. Use sideboards. There's kind of like a little sidebar on the page that's got a picture of a customer who's using a technology and two or three sentences that talks about what they were able to accomplish thanks to your technologies. So the key points are make it real, make it personal, and make it short. And the handouts that you can pick out on any of these chairs go through a few more specific details on why an annual report works really well for us. There'll be links to a couple of annual reports, again, in the EDUCAUSE website. And we're going to go next to a university who's found ways to make print work very well for them. That's Texas A&M.
Thanks, Carlin. My name is Allison Oslin. I'm from Texas A&M University. And I'm not quite sure why print or how print is a 21st century tool, but I'm here to tell you that it works for us, and I want to encourage you to try it out on your campus. Texas A&M IT decided to use print as one of our marketing tools for several reasons. The first reason is that we asked our customers, and I know that's kind of a novel idea in some groups, hopefully not in your university, but when I was brand new in my job about 3 years ago, I really needed to get a feel for the university. I needed to understand what they knew and didn't know about IT on campus. So our customer survey showed us that by only using email or other digital media like websites or or CD-ROMs, our customers were really confused. They didn't know who we were. They didn't understand what services we offered. We did some follow-up focus groups after the surveys, and the students specifically told us, I want something I can hold in my hand. I want something I can interact with. I actually want print instead of something on the web. And that was maybe not, it was a little counterintuitive for us, but that's what they asked for, so we decided to give it to them. I'm going to have some technical difficulties right now. Sorry. Here we go. There we go. So, first reason was tangible. Oh, thank you. The next reason is frequency. Now, I'm going to use some kind of marketing jargon. I hope you'll humor me a little bit, but I have been listening to IT acronyms all week long, so I'm going to throw some terms out there. We know in marketing that frequency, or how many times someone sees one of your messages, is equally as important as reach, or how many people total see your message. And while email is a great tool for reach, you can send it out to your entire campus very quickly. If you want frequency, you want them to send the message two or three times, you've got to use other mediums. And we actually know statistically that in order for someone to either become aware of a message or to act on your message, they must see it at least 3 to 4 times. And so adding print to your marketing mix or communication mix is a great way to increase your frequency. The last reason that we decided to go and try print was because of our brand promise. And again, please no eye rolling. I am a marketing person, and I think branding is very important. And the Texas A&M IT brand strives to be many things. Obviously, we want to be known as IT experts, but we also want to be seen as approachable and accessible. And having print signage out and about on our campus is a great way for us to interact with our customers. So, the signage options that we've particularly chosen are focused on bringing our message to students, primarily to students, although everyone on campus can see the messages. And we want them to see our messages as they go about their weekly activities. They're designed to be seen when they're on the bus or in a class, a sandwich board as they go to a football game, a sign on a computer in our computer lab while they're checking their email or more likely surfing Facebook, a table tent in our dining halls, or finally, a full-page color insert in our campus newspaper. One of the other groups on our team was unable to be here today, but they also jumped on their print bandwagon. Utah State is actually sending postcards in the mail to their campus, specifically when they have important announcements about key services, such as a email system that's being retired or rolling out a new voicemail system. They believe that postcards in the mail is a great way to reach their customers. You'll not be concerned after seeing all this print that, wow, you know, we're in a kind of a budget crisis on our campus. Print's expensive. It's actually not. There are great online printers out there, and they were able to print 4,000 postcards for under $200. And the great thing about these online printers is the turnaround time is incredible. You have, most of them, if you have the order in by 5, you get it next day or second day. So finally, the reason we would like you to really try to move to print is that it's readily available. There are resources all over your campus, I'm sure, where, you know, student organizations are using print. You can use them too. They're also very budget friendly. They're not that expensive to add some variety to your marketing mix. And also, you know, there's flexible timing. You don't have to use print all the time. Particularly on our campus, we use print when it's a really important campaign. We really want to increase awareness. We really want to drive action. And that's when we'll add print. Next is Melanie from UTEP.
Hi, and I want to say, I'm Melanie from University of Texas at El Paso, and I wanted to say it really is a 21st century tool because, you know, years ago we didn't have the graphic software that we have available now to make those paper printouts so fantastic, and it's just amazing what we can do with them now. Well, what I want to talk about is digital signage. So, can you read me now? Why digital signage? Well, the first thing is that when I was doing print, I guess I should tell you that El Paso was named one of the top 10 most texting cities in the United States. So you can see that even though we have about 85% of our students on financial aid, they all have a cell phone. I don't know. So we found that whenever I printed anything, this is where it ended up. You could watch them literally, no matter how much I spent on those fantastic flyers and the new graphics, 10 feet away was a trash can full of them. So I had to find something else. So why did I find digital signage? Well, I can do tons of color and get their attention, and it's free. They're editable, as you can see here. They're editable on the fly. If I post it up and see that there's a misspelling, within seconds I can fix it, and hopefully only a few people saw it. You can get their attention. You can use video. You can use great graphics, audio. Not all of our screens have speakers because of where they are near classrooms and such, but many of them do have audio. So what we have done is in videos, we'll make them so that when you're watching it, if you have sound, great. If you're watching it and you don't have sound, it's okay. You can still tell what's going on in the video. We'll have streaming video. When we were in a bowl game, the whole thing was up on the screens in every building across campus so that all the students, staff, and faculty could watch us playing in the game. We have a rolling ticker, as you see there on the bottom, and that's just weather and things like that. And then emergencies. If we have an emergency weather alert, we actually had a snowstorm last November 30th and December 1st, and we sent everybody home. It comes up a big flashing screen. The entire screen is taken over by the emergency alert. You can put them virtually anywhere. We hang them in our student union. We have them in all of the buildings, usually right outside of elevators or other areas where you walk. We have a lot of pedestrian traffic. We even have them in the library. When you walk in, it's a huge lobby, much like the one downstairs, and so it's two or three stories, and they have a big one up above. And where you have to walk in to go into the stacks or wherever you're going to go to the lab, it's hanging there, and you can't miss it. Oops, wrong one. So what do we do specifically? We promote student organization events. Tons. We have almost 200 student organizations, so they're always promoting things going on. We invite people to other campus events. We have special things for staff and faculty, other things that we hold for the students. We have a dinner theater, so we have lots of things, and we encourage them to promote those there. Like I said, we had a weather storm. We hardly ever have weather. We just have pretty much the same almost every day. It just goes up and down a little bit temperature-wise. But on occasion, we need a way to warn people about that. We post building schedules. We have a couple of buildings with meeting rooms, things like that, so we have them. We're not yet using them in the buildings for class schedules or class changes, but there has been some request for that, and the buildings actually maintain their own signs, so they would be able to do that if they choose to in the future. To spread the news, our College of Business Administration was named number one in the nation for Hispanic students, and we had our fall enrollment this year surpassed 22,000 for the first time ever. So we had those posted up on our digital screens because the students, staff, and faculty really like to know the accomplishments that we've achieved. And then why will you like it? One of the things that's really great is our communications department said, our university communications that promote inside and outside, not just IT like me, but they promote things to the entire campus. They like the fact that part of the screen is theirs to control. They just have one of the small areas, but they have something there all the time. The buildings or the colleges that own the ones in their own buildings, they like the fact that they have the big one that's theirs, and they can promote new classes, their student orgs, things like that. Plus, they have the smaller one if they just need regular, you know, things that don't really change too much. And then the police department likes having the part at the bottom where they can put anything they need to or that they can take over the whole thing. So we have central management, but we also have departmental management, so you have both capabilities. You don't have to wait. If you want to post it up, literally, I make something, and in within seconds, I have it posted up. If there's no paper, there's no toner, you can schedule them to start and end whenever you want them to. So, you know, sometimes you see billboards, they're up there for 40 days after the thing is over. I hate that. With these, you can just tell it, end it by midnight on such and such, and it's gone the day after the event is over. And you can reuse them because mine, it doesn't go away once it unschedules it. It sits there. So next year, if I want to redo it, I can keep the same one and just change the date or manipulate the image just a little bit. So it's really great to keep doing that. And most of the systems, you can arrange the screen in just about any way you want to. So you are almost limitless with the things you can do with it. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Kathy McVeigh, and I'm from Miami University in Oxford, Ohio, not in Florida. And I think every IT organization has a website, obviously, but I don't know if your IT organization is like ours, but we were very much like the proverbial cobbler's children who had no shoes. We kind of let our website languish for a long time. We'd occasionally slap a little lipstick on it to try and dress it up just a little bit so it didn't look terribly old, but basically we never had the organizational will to devote the time, energy, and resources to really rewriting, reworking, and making it work. As you can see, what it is there are three separate kinds of navigation. We've got big, long lists of services. We've got lovely organizational areas that nobody knows what they mean. And we were at a point where we had three front doors. We had this, which was our divisional website. We had our knowledge base, which connected with our help desk. And then we were bringing our service catalog online. Somebody decided that should be up there too. So we had basically what I saw as three front doors to our organization. And how in the world were students, faculty, and staff supposed to figure out where they were going to go to get the information they needed? So it's budget cutting time. It's major reorganization time. We changed the names of all of our silos. So we were going to have to do some work on the web anyway. So I pulled together a small group of people who I knew were very get it done kind of folks. We just made some clear rules about what we were going to do, and we tackled the website. We decided that our goals were to organize the content by service, not by organizational chart. The information had to be easy to find. The content had to be written for our clients, not for us. And the information had to be easily updated so that it possibly might be updated. Working towards those goals, we started from the foundation up. As you can see, we've got all kinds of, we worked with charts and site maps and all kinds of things. We did online card sorting exercises. We did traditional surveys. We looked at all kinds of university IT websites to find out what pieces would work for Miami and how would Miami's people, when they came to our website, where would they intuitively go to find the information they needed? So basically anything that would inform our building process. So once we had our basic foundation built and we were happy with that, then we took a survey of what we had in our existing website, and what we found was pretty much a dismal swamp of abandoned pages up against a lot of things that were just a total variety of style, font, content, colors, just all over the map. There was no uniformity or consistency, no way to know that you were still in the Miami University IT site. So our project manager, who is a brilliant woman, identified a couple of the most egregious pages that were in our site, and we went to an IT manager's meeting, and we showed some of those pages, not to shame anybody and not to say, look at how bad you've been, and look, this unit had this terrible thing up there. I mean, there were meeting minutes from 2001. There were services that had disappeared years ago. There was information on ancient products, on people that had left years ago. I'm sure I see a few nodding, so I think maybe some of you might be familiar with this situation. And what we did is we said to the managers, we want your buy-in. We want you to agree to apply some of your staff time, allocate that time to helping us create new content, and then in a continuing way to make sure that content stays up to date. What we did, and this was working with through our service catalog, we looked at each area and we said, okay, who owns this information? And because we were organizing by service, we were looking at services and how they lined up. The service catalog became actually the source of our, of the the service descriptions. They're both built in the same Drupal instance. So when you, when we present the service description, you will see the same thing whether you're in the IT website or whether you're in the service catalog website. And we did the same thing with our knowledge base. If we had any how-to information presented in the divisional website, it actually lives in our knowledge base. So we weren't recreating information. We weren't making places where things needed to be updated multiple places. Drupal also means that the information is easy to update. We went around to each service owner that had been identified. We gave them one-on-one help to show them just how easy it was going to be to enter the content and then to keep it up to date. The other thing that Drupal affords us is some really good reporting and content management tools in terms of, you know, how page content will expire on a certain date, and we forced everyone to put an expiration date where they would get a notification as the owner of that content when it was coming up to update. So, in February, we launched our site. We were actually on time. We were not really quite on budget, but I fault my web designer for that. He took a lot longer than he anticipated. But I think some of that had to do with the tie-in between the service catalog and the website that we had not anticipated at the beginning. That became an opportunity that grew as the project went on. We launched our site in cooperation with our strategic planning effort. The panel you see in the middle there, that is our strategic planning site, which is a page built into our divisional website. We used a crowdsourcing tool that was we built in Drupal to solicit comments from across the university, from faculty, staff, and students. And the largest panel there, that is our home site. We now have, you can see the chat now, that links directly to a chat for with our support desk. We have alerts and notifications. We have popular destinations, and that constantly is monitoring where are people going within our website, so it's dynamically creating that list. And we have news and events, which we used to do a paper newsletter, and we, with our budget cutting, that wasn't in the cards any longer, so we needed a way to be able to get information out on the fly. And another way to get information out that we controlled directly. So that became very much a focus. Along the bottom, you'll see, if you can, I don't know, the type may be small, but there's an item that says about IT. That's where all that silo type information lives. And if you click there, anybody who's in love with what the organization is, all that information lives there. It's easily accessible, but it's not the focus. The focus is on the services, which are accessed by the tabs at the top. It was nearly a year in making. We had a great team. It was one of the most successful projects that I had worked on within our IT division in a long time, and I think we ended up with one good front door that works well with the other side doors, and we feel like everything came up roses. Thank you.
My name is Sherry Thompson. I'm from LSU, and I am a social media addict. It's sad but true. It came to a point in my career where I had to make a decision where I was going to be on Facebook, I was going to be tweeting, and I should be getting paid for it as well. So I decided that LSU's information technology services had to be mobile. We wanted to make sure that we were reaching students and staff whenever and wherever they were, and a great way to do that just happened to be through Facebook and Twitter. So I set up these accounts, and we use it to market everything from events that are happening that we want people to go to, new services that are coming out, and we also use it for very practical things like, oops, email's not working right now, sorry, so, you know, don't try to get anything that way. Oh, and it totally messed it up, sorry. Let me go backwards. How do I go back? Yeah. Okay, so it changed a little bit how I do it. Okay. So we maintain both accounts. Again, that's what they're used for. But I wanted to say that these are free services. These aren't things that cost anything more than my time. But they do cost my time, and that's a very important aspect that you need to think about if you're going to be rolling out Twitter or Facebook. These are instant areas of communication. People don't want to wait all minute for you to get back to them. They think that if it's there, you're there. So you need to make sure that these are being monitored. There are lots of tools out there like Hootsuite and TweetDeck so that you can be watching things simultaneously and responding to issues. This is a wonderful way to get that two-way communication with your customers that you want, to make sure that you're saying, oh, yeah, we noticed that this is down. No, sorry, you know, Facebook isn't, it's a Facebook problem, not an LSU network problem that you can't get onto Facebook right now. So it's those sorts of communications that can go out. And again, it has to be instantaneous. People don't want to, if you're just sending out things one way and not monitoring what's going on, people aren't going to follow you. They're not going to really pay attention. But they also don't want you cluttering up their home pages. So you have to make sure that the messages you're sending out are timely, are interesting, are short, so they can fit in a tweet, and then also that they're not, you know, getting bombarded by you three times a day. It's a low-cost, high-return item. Oh, wrong way. Oh, because now I'm going that way. Sorry. Again, mobility is key. And I am done. It's okay. Yeah. It's all right.
Good morning. I'm Jeff Overholzer, Director of Strategic Planning and Communication at Washington and Lee University. We're a small, competitive liberal arts institution in Virginia. And we're pretty new to video. This is among the newest of our communication channels. It complements the way that we do other things. None of our communication is exclusively through video, but it does accent and complement the other ways that we communicate. Our approach to video is very basic and informal, almost in the fashion of a blog. We don't have a video production team. Most of our videos are created with a point-and-shoot still camera that also has video capability. We use basic software like Windows Movie Maker and iMovie. And most of it has been created and overseen by me. I'm shifting that over time to faculty and trying to leverage students as well. I'm going to show you a series of videos that demonstrate an evolution in our style and the way that we've done these videos. This is our YouTube channel. I'll say a little bit about that in a minute. This first video is an early one that we did in 2008, and I'll show it to you.
People to tell you about their experience.
So when previewing this,
For me it was very...
already launched this, and it's. I'll show it to you from the beginning. Here we go.
Hi, this is Rick Peterson. Happy New Year. Want to spend a little time today on the video, sharing some comments from other members of Washington and Lee about our move to Microsoft Outlook and Exchange. As you know, we're in the middle of our migration right now and are on track to finish that by the end of February. So far, things have been going well, and here's a couple people to tell you about their experience.
For me, it was very smooth. Since I use a tablet, basically a laptop, I had to be sure to put it in the dock on the day that the transfer was going to occur, and went to a few meetings, came back later, and the Outlook client was there.
So that's just a brief excerpt of the video. The idea there was to kind of address some anxiety and uncertainty in our community about this massive migration from GroupWise email and calendaring to Outlook. And so for the hundreds of people who hadn't been through that change already, we went out, talked to four people who had done it, and they talked about, what happened to my data, how long did it take, did I still have some of the important functionality that I had in GroupWise? And they addressed those things. And I think it was pretty successful at helping people appreciate and understand what was involved in this move. And it was one of our most watched videos to date. This next video was created by a student working under my direction, and it showcases some of the changes we made in our library in conjunction with the creation of a shared services desk, shared by the reference desk, the library staff, and the IT staff at the information desk. This one will probably start in the middle too, but I'll rewind it.
We'll find the video editing room. The video editing room is available by...
All right.
Hi, welcome back to another ITS production. My name is Josh Gonzalez, and today I'm going to take you on a virtual tour of Leyburn Library.
As you walk in the front doors, you'll see two sets of islands full of computer workstations. These workstations are available to all students at any time. They contain either a dual-screen PC system or new Macintosh desktop systems. Both types of computers are full of state-of-the-art software that all students can learn how to use. Beyond the workstation islands, students will find the video editing room. The video editing room is available by reservation.
So again, just a brief excerpt, but you can see the evolution in style. This is more in the nature of a narrated slideshow. It's more visual, gives examples and illustrations of the new workstations and capabilities that we added to the library. In our latest videos, what we're really trying to move toward is showcasing the efforts of faculty and staff and students in using our services and our tools. So this is a video by a theater professor who created what he calls a digital fairy tale that he had plans to incorporate in his classes. And here is just the beginning of that.
The chalkboard, he or she, or...
Skip over that one.
As he sat at table, his hand shook so that he would often spill the soup over the tablecloth. Once upon a time, there was a very old man who lived with his son and daughter-in-law. His eyes were dim, his knees tottered under him when he walked, and he was very deaf. As he sat at table, his hand shook so that he would often spill the soup over the tablecloth or on his clothes, and sometimes he could not even keep it in his mouth when he got it there. His son and daughter were so annoyed to see his conduct at the table that at last they placed a chair for him in the corner behind the screen and gave him his meals in an earthenware basin quite away from the rest. He would often look sorrowfully at the table with tears in his eyes, but he did not complain.
So it's a sad story, but unlike many of the Grimm tales, he doesn't get eaten at the end. If you want to see how it comes out, go to our YouTube channel at its.wlu.edu. It is a happy ending. So this demonstrates kind of a future direction that we want to go, showing what faculty are doing with our tools. And we think this is much more likely to create a higher viewership and interest than us talking about the things we do. It's important to remember that the nature of video is a visual medium, and so you have to find visual ways to tell your story. If you're going to talk about a new server, you definitely don't want pictures of the thing running in your data room, but maybe show how it's empowered faculty to teach in new ways and show them doing that in their classroom. So video really, as I mentioned before, it's an adjunct to other forms of communication. It was mentioned early in the presentation, when people see things repeatedly in different contexts in different ways, it does help reinforce the message. And so this is another way for us to tell the story, a way to tell it visually, and we think helps cement the message that we're trying to get through to our audiences. another lesson learned is to try to incorporate this in some kind of framework. We've chosen the YouTube. There are other tools, Vimeo and others that you may be familiar with. But they offer kind of a nice frame that let you archive, give you an automatic way to archive the videos, to annotate them, to even showcase maybe some of your favorite videos from outside ITS. So, and it also provides metrics that show us how many people have been watching and how they get to the video, whether it's from the embedded page on ITS or from a YouTube search or a Google search, and those are helpful things to know. You do need to vigorously cross-promote with other forms of communication. So, for instance, at the end of this video, we showcase some of the ways that ITS is helping people to do digital video, loanable cameras and digital audio recorders, the workshops on digital video. We talk about that. We say for more information, see its.wlu.edu. We also send emails, notifications. We have a new video. So we do vigorous cross-promotion among these various media. And again, to repeat this, in video, it's really important to show what your people are doing and not just talk about what you're doing. So kind of a wrap-up, since I'm the last here, I want to say a little bit about how these different forms of communication relate to each other. It's certainly true that for almost any communication effort that we wouldn't use any single one of these media, that they complement each other, they do provide a way to give additional impressions and additional contexts. But it's also true that some media may be better adapted to certain audiences. So, for instance, if I wanted to communicate to high-level administrators about a new IT initiative, I wouldn't use a video as my first way of introducing that topic. I'd probably use a memo. But then in the course of rolling it out to the whole campus, a video would be one of the ways to address the topic, and perhaps in a little bit different complementary way. And if I can sort of adapt the old teaching adage, the approach in using these media in different ways in different contexts is to tell them what you told them, and to tell them again using different forms of communication. So we'd like to take your questions for any one of us on any of the topics that we've addressed or any others. Yes.
At first, we had a little bit of money, and we put a few digital screens up to get a taste of who was interested and if we wanted to expand that. Then after that, we offered it to other colleges and departments, and if they wanted it, they had to pay for it. And it's not inexpensive, but it's not a huge expense either. Depending on how many screens they wanted, they could actually get it done for even, I don't know, $12,000 to $15,000, they had a pretty good presentation. Because the screens are smaller because they're right where you're standing in front of them.
But they didn't have a problem paying for the hardware, but allowing you part of the screen real estate and part of the control.
Right. Well, we paid the central piece, the database, so they didn't have that expense. They just had their one box, kind of like a server, and one screen to four screens. So it wasn't as big as an expense for them. And the point was we had to have the ability for the control because of the emergency notification system. Then we were able to get a grant, and when the campus saw what a service it could be campus-wide, then we were able to get, with that grant and some other monies, we were able to put in 30 more screens all at once. And so that's how we ended up. We have 11 buildings and 30 screens right now. So it really does make a difference. But we had to use that emergency notification piece, and that's really how we helped get the funding for the rest of the screens. And we're still putting more, so.
Do you provide training and support for the people who are responsible for administering the content for these screens?
Absolutely. We really try to encourage at least two administrators for each system. And we teach them, but our system is so easy. You create something in a PowerPoint, You load it up, you tell it when to run it. That's it. So it's, they don't have to be total graphic experts. They can put something very simple and it can be up, and if within 15 minutes you can have information up. Physics. We use the physics system, which is, by the way, in the vendor area. She said that you have central administration, but then if you want to post things across, how do you get that done? Do they allow that? We have, we agreed, we have a committee, and we agreed that the small upper box was for university communications, campus-wide announcements. The big box and another smaller box is for the people that paid for, supposedly, or own it in their building, that screen, and the bottom for police services to run things. What we do is, if I have a special event and I really want it in the big box, I have, there's an email that we send to all of the administrators, and I request, I'd really like this in the big box. I need it from this date to this date. Thank you. I really appreciate it. And if you do it for them, they're more likely to do it for you, but they don't have to put it in the big box, but they will post it. And then I always ask them to tell me when they've posted it, because that encourages them to do it faster and to get it in a timely way. But you're right. Because it belongs in their building, they have the right to say, no, I'm not putting it there. They have to post it somewhere, so they usually do it in their little one. But many of them, because we're reciprocal, have helped and put it in the larger box, which, of course, shows more than the smaller ones. But, it you know, if you make good relationships with those people, then it works better. That's a great question. She said, do we require any standardized look and feel? We actually have a template that we push out to all the screens, and that's why we have that big box, the two little boxes, and the one at the bottom. And then ours says UTEP Today. That's a logo across the top. So they all have that. So they all have the same template everywhere.
We've got the same issue at Miami. And we kind of have come to an agreement. We can do something. We agree to do some things as what we call a flood mailing. They'll give us a list of this, of each department's count, and then we'll bundle them and send them. But if it's something that's important, we do personalize. We try to limit that. Right now we're in the middle or at the beginning, really, of a Sakai implementation. So I'm doing monthly postcards to all the faculty members, and we are personally addressing those and sending them out via campus mail, because that message is really important. We have a very, you know, we're just sending them to the faculty. If we do a mailing to the entire campus, I've found that really does, it doesn't work to send mail to the students in the residence halls, because that, whether you personalize or whether you just send them a bundle, they end up in the trash. That just doesn't work at our campus. For large units like our PFD, the physical facilities, housing, dining, they specifically ask that you send them a bundle because they're just so large. But generally people will, in the smaller departments, will put them into mailboxes. So it's... Our campus copy center has the variable data capabilities. So we get the current address list from the office of the university secretary and send it to them, and they do the mailing as they're doing the printing.
I have some stuff to add real quickly. We actually send a newsletter out every semester to all of our staff and faculty, so it's 10,000 pieces, and we do address those personally. Printer actually does that for us. It's an online printer company, and they do that for us. Other times we've had to actually print the labels ourselves. But we also bundle them for the mail services. So if we print them personal but then bundle them, they're absolutely okay with it. We can't just, you know, print them and deliver them in mass. So that's the one way we found around it. Yes, sir. In the green.
Thank you.
On our newsletter specifically, we don't make it about our services as much as we make it about tools and tips for them. We've done 3 newsletters so far. One of the most well-received was our summer newsletter that was about working from home or working, you know, a lot of our faculty do research trips in the summer and how you can, you know, do your work outside of the office. And one way we can gauge how well our readership is we actually have a crossword puzzle that sounds really strange, but there, you know, a lot of people like doing the New York Times crossword puzzle or any kind of other crossword puzzle. We have that on the back, and it actually has, it's about IT security. There's a few of the clues, probably 10 of the 40 are about IT security. And if they fill it out, they can get a coupon offer for like a free coffee or a free cookie at some places around campus. And they go check the results on one of our websites, and we've gotten several hundred, you know, people logging in the website to check their results. So we know that, you know, people are at least filling out the crossword and checking the results. So.
And in terms of reaching the administrators, if you're marketing your services correctly, you don't have to be the advocate for it. The faculty and the staff who are using these services will be the advocate for it. So they'll be the ones at the budget meeting going, oh, wait, no, don't cut IT right now. They're providing really important services, and you don't have to necessarily be at the table. It's not so much about, you know, plugging IT, but making sure that people are aware of the services you're providing and how they're being used effectively. You're asking if how we use social media. Is it mainly for alerts about things not working, or is it also for marketing? And we use it for both. I will tell you that during Gustav, we have hurricanes that happen in Louisiana. They come and we actually wound up facility services trusted the faulty fuel gauge, and we ran out of petrol. And so LSU.edu, LSU email, everything disappeared. The only connection we had to the outside world was Facebook and Twitter. So, you know, when those kinds of things happen, yeah, it's going to be alert, it's going to be news, but it's a very important mechanism for that. And, you know, I think that part of the marketing persona is when you're talking about your brand, you're talking about your services, being honest and being transparent about what's happening is as important as the message that you're trying to send about a service or something else. So they go hand in hand. The gentleman in the back corner. Sure, he wants to know the, I'm sorry, I'm repeating it for the recording. He wants to know what the tools were that you could use to manage Facebook and Twitter. One of them is called Hootsuite, HOOTSUITE. Hootsuite is a mobile, it's not downloadable, it's just something that you can access through the web. You can use it to manage your communications that are going out. You can actually have messages like, you know, set up, you can say, okay, well, today I want these messages to go out this week and have them sent out over time to both Twitter and to Facebook or to MySpace or to whatever else you're using. Hootsuite has a free package, and then it also has an enterprise package. So what I would recommend is that if you've got a lot of people on campus, they're going to be using Hootsuite, like your communications and university relations office. Team up with them and see if you can purchase that and use the multiple licenses to communicate effectively. TweetDeck is another tool. TweetDeck is a download tool, so it's a little bit different than Hootsuite. You can't just, you know, hit a URL and go to it. You have to have it downloaded to your device. And that, again, is a way to just manage things. And it doesn't have the same sort of features of being able to time a thing, but you can make instant little post to that one place, and you can monitor. You've got multiple screens, so you can look at what's going on, who's tweeting about you. You can look at, see who's, you know, who's retweeting and direct comments and stuff like that too.
I'm sorry, we're going to have to cut it short. We'll stay for a few minutes to answer your questions one-on-one. The most important resource we need to tell you about is an EDUCAUSE constituent group called IT Communicators. There's a list that's very active. We do coffee shops the second Friday of every month where we get together virtually and talk for an hour about our issues. So whether you're a communicator or you have a communicator, please tell them about the list. The more people we have giving input, the better we all grow. So thank you very much for coming. Come talk to us if you have questions, and everything will be on the EDUCAUSE website if you want to know more about the annual report.